Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm so excited you're here to hear the latest and the greatest about guests from all around the quilting world. We're going to have tips and tricks and everything else. So today I have three really, really wonderful people. And I have to tell you, the first quilter that I have on is someone that I met when we were doing a booth together at the trade show. Our booths were like right next to each other, and that's how you make friends in the industry, I think. You always, you know, you hang out, you meet people, get to know them. So I have Glenna Haley of Hollyhock Quilts, and she is amazing. She works with feed sacks and vintage fabrics and new fabrics, and I'm just so excited because Glenna's going to tell us all kinds of awesome things. Hi, Glenna. How are you?
I'm good, Pat. How are you?
Oh, I am so excited to have you on the show. Do you remember when we had booths next to each other?
Absolutely. It was a great time.
I know. It was so exciting because you are just so adorable and all of your things are wonderful.
You are so funny.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I thought, oh, I need to have booths next to Glenna all the time. And even our husbands struck it right at the beginning, didn't they? They were just
hanging out
the whole time.
Yes, it really was. It was a fun, one of the most fun experiences I've had at Martin.
Oh, it's a love fest. It's a love fest, everybody. You just have to love Glenna when you meet her. So tell me, how did you actually get into quilting, Glenna?
Well, as most quilters, I think, it was just kind of another new experience to try. And I had crafted all my life, doing one thing and then another, and decided to take a class, and that was the end of every other craft that I had ever attempted in my life.
You know, I think that happens to a lot of people. Do you find that when you're talking to quilters, you know, the bug hits?
It is. It's absolutely a bug or a virus or whatever it is that you want to call it. But everybody who quilts knows exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. And now when you first started quilting, you have a specific style that you've been doing for a while now. But when you first started, did you quilt with the fabric palettes that you're using now?
No. It was it took a long time for me to find my niche. I had worked and taught in quilt shops for about 10 years and found myself being drawn to vintage look, vintage fabrics, and this was before reproductions had hit. So I just loved the look and found myself buying feed sacks and vintage fabrics and all kinds of wonderful old quilt-related items, and it just kind of bloomed from there.
Now, your style is using these sort of 30s and the feed sacks, but you also are an antiquer. You go out and you actually buy the old feed sacks, but did you start antiquing before you quilted, or did that sort of come together?
You know, it did. It kind of came together. I really had not been much of an antiquer, and my love of buying vintage textiles kind of led into buying other antique items. And, in fact, I even had antique booths and that type of thing over the years. But then I let all that go and finally just decided that textiles was my thing.
Well, now, first, let me tell everybody your website, Hollyhock Quilts, with an S on the end, .com, so you can go out there and visit Glenna and see all her fabulous stuff. So let's talk a little bit about feed sacks, because you are an expert, and I just think they're fascinating. Let's just talk about finding vintage feed sacks. How does one go about doing that?
Well, anytime I'm lecturing, I always get the question, where do you find your feed sack? And my first answer is, if there was a magic feed sack place, I would not tell you where it was. But it took a lot of hard work and a lot of looking over the years. I, of course, started buying them before the internet became so popular. And the internet has opened up the market for feed sacks hugely. It's so much easier to find feed sacks now than it was 20 years ago when I started looking myself. But it just, you just look everywhere you go, and I, of course, I say they find me, but and they do.
They do, right. Do let's talk about the style first of feed sacks, because I am totally fascinated by the ones that are have the logos on them.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about those.
Well, those were the first ones that became popular, and it was just a great way for companies to be able to get their name out there and people to know who they were and what they did. During the Depression, and some of this, I have to tell you, I'm not a history expert on feed sacks. Most of what I know, I just have kind of gathered, and if it's wrong and someone disagrees with me, I apologize.
No worries.
In my opinion, during the Depression, the mills and the feed companies and other staple companies realized that people were reusing these logo stacks, and so they decided to see if there was a market for pretty sacks, and they started producing what they called dress prints. And
Is that what they're called? Because, you know, I own one of those.
Do you? What?
Yeah, it's pink. Pink flowers. Imagine that, pink.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So unusual.
But, yeah, they became so popular, and you hear story after story of mom telling dad she needed four sacks to make a particular dress. So they sold a lot more feed by offering it in pretty sacks than they ever had before. It was a wonderful marketing.
I'll bet. Yeah. And now you told me that they didn't actually, even though they're called feed sacks, there were other, there were different products that I actually purchased in these, not just like, you know, feed for the chickens or something.
And that's true. And over the years, they have been called lots of different things. They've been called chicken linen and cotton bag, actually, was a real popular term during the period. But they held sugar, and they held flour, and they held salt, and all kinds of different staples. But for today, the term feed sack is the one thing that has survived. And it kind of encompasses all of the sacks that were produced at that time.
Now, you know, we've probably, you know, all of us have heard stories of people, you know, saying that they had their little dresses out of, you know, the pretty sacks, and, you know, possibly even their underwear. I heard that. It's like, that's sort of rough, don't you think? The fabric.
Well, you know, as they are washed, they become softer and softer and softer.
Oh.
And in fact, you know, and even today, women love to use feed sack kitchen towels because they are so soft and they just do such a great job.
They need to wash them more.
The more you wash them, the softer they get. Yep.
So tell me about, you know, they have a different kind of weave. They're, you know, and when you're buying vintage, they might be dirty. You know, how do you handle them once you've purchased them?
Well, I'm not kind to them. Let me assure you that. I kind of get tickled at people who say, you know, to treat these vintage fabrics with loving hands, et cetera. Well, I'm not that way. I soak them until they're clean, and then I wash them, and they come out beautifully. So apparently they have just really held up well over the years, and I just don't have any problem with using them at all.
What kind of cleaner would you use if you had a bad stain on one? Because, you know, like you said, a lot of them were just sort of, you know, maybe they were rags that you might find, so they might be pretty dirty.
Well, and usually the ones that were used like that, you're not going to be able to survive or to put them in quilts. But but they're still dirty because many of them were stored in barns, obviously. That's what they were used for, was feed. And so my favorite, and I guess it's okay to tell you a brand name. Okay. My favorite cleaner is OxiClean, and I usually soak. I put a lot of product in, and I soak them for about 24 hours, and they usually come out beautiful.
Oh, that's a good tip. Yeah, maybe it's the longevity, too. You know, people might be a little timid and not leave it sit for long enough.
Right. I think so. I do.
Now, what do you find when you're out lecturing and teaching and whatnot, or just, you know, visiting with quilters? Are there sort of two camps, the like them and not like them group? Is there any in between?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's usually one or the other. I have found over the years that women who grew up with feed sacks, it depended on how they were presented to them. If mom said, you have to wear this because that's all we can afford, they generally don't care anything about feed sacks. They don't want to use them. They want nothing to do with them. But the ones who were presented with, I'm going to make you this little dress out of these beautiful sacks, and they're the ones that say, oh, my mama made me the most beautiful dresses out of feed sacks, and you know, it was that you got to do it instead of you had to do it, and it makes all the difference in the world.
That's an interesting comparison, because you are hearing so much from different quilters. Very cool. Now, do you sell vintage feed sacks yourself still? Are you still selling them?
I actually don't have anything online right now because I'm kind of going through a change in my selling. But, yes, for years I have sold feed sacks, and they just become more and more popular all the time. And, of course, the prices continue to go up as they become more popular. But
Cool. Well, we're going to take a little break, Glenna. And when we come back, I want to talk about your book, which is fabulous, and we'll talk about some other stuff. So come right back and listen to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio right after the break.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to Facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Make your projects so much easier with great products from Sewline. Sewline offers a variety of innovative quality marking tools for quilters and sewers. The Sewline Trio is a 3-in-1 fabric marking tool that allows you to quickly change from black ceramic to white lead to a blank stylus with just one click. Both leads are water-soluble and designed to provide a crisp, clean line that's easy to erase. To purchase Sewline products, visit your local quilt shop.
Beautiful computerized quilting is simple with the HQ Pro Stitcher. Every design becomes a perfect fit for your quilt with the HQ Pro Stitcher. You can resize, repeat, rotate, and crop right on the new 10-inch color touchscreen. No computer needed. The HQ Pro Stitcher works with all HQ Stitch regulated machines and has a quick setup that allows you to get quilting in no time.
Visit HandyQuilter.com to request a free demo DVD or find an HQ rep in your area. Handy Quilter, designed by a quilter for quilters.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Take
take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Hey, this is Pat Sloan. We're back with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, and I'm here with Glenna Haley of Hollyhock Quilts. So, Glenna, your book, Sugar Sack Quilts, is awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you, dear. I have really, really enjoyed writing that book. It was the book that I was hoping to find and didn't, so I decided to write it myself.
Well, there you go. I think that's how all great books start. You know, you can't find what's in your head, so you just do it.
There you go.
So tell us a little bit about what you put into your book.
Well, what I mostly was interested in was the feed sack designs that were produced during the heyday of feed sacks, which is basically from the late 30s through the very early 60s. Mm-hmm. And to my knowledge, there are about 20,000 feed sack designs that have been documented, maybe a little less. Mm-hmm. And so most people don't realize there are that many, but the designs themselves, and these were produced by people who worked for the fabric companies and mills, just like we produce designs
yeah.
today. And they are such wonderful designs to.
That's a lot of designs. I had no idea.
Yeah, there were a lot of designs produced. Most people identify little florals with feed sack, but in truth, it runs the gamut. There were designs made for every imaginable thing that you could imagine.
Cool. Well, I just love the book. You've done a fabulous job. And now I'm going to put you in charge of finding me a sugar feed sack logo.
Okay. I can do that.
And I'll buy it from you because I didn't buy one when I should have. You know how that is.
Yes, I do. And don't ever pass it by.
I know. Bad, bad, bad. So, you know, I've been obsessing about it for years. So now's my chance. I'm putting in a special request. So
that's
American
funny.
Patchwork and Quilting has a calendar. And you, my dear, are in the 2011 calendar. And guess what month you are?
Well, I thought it was April.
Well, I hear you're October, so we'll have to see. We'll see what it is. That's what my note says, but you know I could be wrong. So, but everybody's going to have to go out because congratulations. That's always a lot of fun to be in the calendar.
I am looking forward to seeing it. It's been a lot of fun to work with them. They are just wonderful.
They are. I just love them to death. So tell me, you have a new toy that you've been telling me about. You are in love with die cuts. Tell me about this.
Well, that was one other thing that I just thought would be so much fun in feed sacks. And so coming this fall or earlier, if I can, mm-hmm. I'll be offering authentic die cut feed sacks. Many of them will be ready to fuse, and there will be a lot of applique designs that are just ready to iron on and enjoy. Others will be available for piecing, many of them with the traditional kind of quilts that feed sacks generally were used for.
Mm-hmm.
So I am really looking forward to getting into that a little deeper.
So now these are all with the fusible on the back, so they'll get a shape like tulips or sailboats or whatever. But how do you like doing the fusible with the feed sacks? You were telling me that, you know, there's some reasons you like that.
There you are. Because they are a little more loosely woven, they're probably not best for needle turn applique.
Mm-hmm.
I have oftentimes used a raw edge applique, which I then, of course, sew by machine.
Mm-hmm.
Or I like also to do a little running stitch around the edge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I like to do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not probably the best fabric to use for needle turn.
Okay. So when I had another question. So I know this is not about the shapes, but when you put feed sacks into a quilt, whether you mix them or not, are there any tips, any issues people need to be aware of using vintage feed sacks in the finished quilt?
Not really. A lot of people, I have heard a lot of people say that they think that feed sacks are stretchier and more difficult to use. Mm-hmm. I personally don't have that experience. I find mm-hmm. them just as easy to sew with as I do any other traditional fabric. As far as the finished quilt, as I told you when we were talking about washing and that right. type of thing, I find that they hold up to everything. I've never had any problem washing or drying or using them however they need to be.
So people should just go for it and enjoy it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I hear that all the time. Oh, I have a stack of feed sacks, you know, yay high. And I can't bear to cut into them. And so my response is, fine, sell them to me. You know? I have no trouble using them.
Yeah, right. There you go, you know. There will always be a use for them if Glenna has a hold of them.
So on
your website, Glenna, you have a peek into your sewing studio, which is a bit of a before and after, and people can come see all your treasures stacked up in there.
Well, like I said, I'm not sure there's enough difference between the before and after, but at least I know where most everything is.
And you were telling me also that you actually have your stock that you sell and your personal things just sort of all together in your studio, so that you actually might use things that, you know, you might be selling it and you might not.
Exactly. And that's what I tell people to remember when they're so overwhelmed with all the stuff that I have, is just remember that's also my inventory. So it's not all items that I have bought for me just to play with and use.
And people have to go to hollyhockquilts.com and click on the sidebar and see the studio, because you have a really nifty little extra shelving above your doors.
Yes, that was Bill's attempt at helping me get some things off the floor.
Well, it's clever.
It is great.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's very, very clever. And I think the one very interesting note that I spied there was that on your cutting table, you actually have your ironing, like an ironing board part, right flush with the cutting table.
Yes, that's true. I had a big board on mm-hmm. a regular ironing board, and I loved it, but it seemed like that space underneath could have better use. So Bill built me that cabinet, and I love it. It just makes all the difference in the world. And then he mounted the big board on the top, so I have that wonderful ironing area. Mm-hmm. And still have space for storage underneath, which I think makes a lot of sense.
Cool. So let's talk about rickrack. You have a tutorial about fusing rickrack, but let's talk about this, because rickrack has, first of all, tell me how you fuse the rickrack.
I simply cut little tiny, like quarter inch strips, mm-hmm. and I just fuse it like I would anything else. Iron it on, and as you, I use fusing as a method to keep from having to pin or baste. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, it's simply a method of using it for placement until it can be secured with hand or machine stitching.
Right.
So that's the way I can do it with rickrack. I know you've used a lot of rickrack, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. it does not pin well. It's hard to get the curves that you want and that type of thing with pinning. Mm-hmm. So by fusing it, you can lay it out exactly the way you want it to be and iron it down, and it stays that way until you get it sewn. So it works out.
So let's talk about sewing it, because a lot of people really, if they're going to wash an item, they don't want those little curves to be flipping up.
Exactly.
How do you tack down or sew your rickrack?
I have two methods that I like to use. Really, my preferred method is to tack the inside and outside points on both sides of the rickrack. A lot of people think that sounds really tedious, but I'm not talking about fine hand applique. I really do just tack it with one stitch, and it holds it beautifully. If I am going to sew, then I follow the lines. I follow the zigzag of the rickrack. So you, in either case, you don't have the edges curling up like you do if you sew down the middle.
Right. So you don't actually, when you say you sew it on the machine, are you putting a zigzag that tries to match it, or are you just sort of turning the fabric as you go along?
I turn the fabric.
Okay. So you've got a straight stitch, and you're just sort of weaving the fabric back and forth along the length of the rickrack.
Exactly. Exactly. I have a machine that, where I can set to where the presser foot raises when it stops. Which is just wonderful because I take about three stitches and I stop and it raises and then I turn the fabric. So I'm not moving the presser foot up and down with my hand all the time.
I love that. I love that automation part of any machine that helps us out.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. And you collect a little rickrack, maybe some vintage stuff?
I do. I most of what I collect, it's for my own use, but I have a lot, and that's one of my downfalls is rickrack and zigzag.
It's one of your charms, my dear. It's one of your charms. Now, I think vintage rickrack is fabulous. I've got a small collection myself. I think it's a lot of fun.
Well, the packaging itself is wonderful, and the colors, of course, are exactly what you need when you're working with vintage fabrics. So they're just a natural match. Just they work so well together. It just seems like you need to use them together.
Right, and they're not that expensive if you go hunting around.
No, they're not. Yeah. And again, the internet is a great place to start a good collection there.
Well, you know, Glenna, this has been absolutely fabulous to have you on.
Boy, you're so sweet. I sure have enjoyed talking to you.
Well, you know, everybody needs to go out and visit Glenna's website at hollyhockquilts.com and then look for her on, you know, check her blog because you blog quite a bit. So it's a lot of fun, all her tutorials. And I appreciate you being here today.
Thank you so much, Pat. We'll see you soon, I hope.
Yes, I hope so, too. And be looking for that sugar sack for me. It should say sugar on it.
I may have something for you.
Ooh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. We'll see you. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Pat.
Come right back with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio for another guest.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Pam.
What have you been quilting lately?
I just finished a Lone Star quilt for my niece's wedding.
Oh, I can't wait to see the finished quilt.
Me too. I have so many finished tops that I'm really considering looking into a long arm of my own. Don't you have a handy quilter? I've heard good things about them.
I do, and I love my HQ18 Avante. No more UFOs at my house. I have so much space to work with, and it's so fast. The stitch regulator gives me perfect stitches every time, and the precision glide track systems makes quilting so smooth I could quilt all day.
I would love that. I've been looking at the HQ24 Fusion.
Oh, I think that would be perfect for you. It's got all the great HQ features of the Avante with more throat space. You'll love working with Handy Quilter. Their customer service is top-notch.
Visit HandyQuilter.com to request a free demo DVD or find an HQ rep in your area. Handy Quilter, designed by a quilter, for quilters.
Moda Fabrics brings you the hottest new fabric lines for quilting. We work with more than 40 of your favorite independent designers, as well as in-house design staff to make sure you have the latest and greatest in fabrics. We're committed to creating high-quality products and providing excellent customer service. And for 35 years, Moda Fabrics has proudly supported the independent quilt shop. Visit your local independent quilt shop to see what's new from Moda Fabrics.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
We're back with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. As you know, I'm sure you don't know, maybe all of you, but I love antique quilts. Love, love, love them. They are like my inspiration, and I totally feel connected to people who make quilts before me because they do inspire me tremendously. I am so excited to have my next guest on, who is a shop owner, a designer of patterns and of fabric, Julie Hendrickson of JJ Stitches. And JJ Stitches has been in the American Patchwork and Quilt Sampler magazine. Hi, Julie. How are you doing?
Hi, Pat. How are you today?
I am awesome.
Good.
So, tell everybody where your store is first, because once they hear you, they're all going to come running.
JJ Stitches is in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. We're about 10 minutes from Madison, easy on, easy off, Interstate 90 and 94.
Cool. I'm going to have to come visit. So tell me, Julie, how did you start, getting excited about antique quilts? Did that start right from the beginning, or did it happen after a little bit?
Back in the early 80s is when I bought my first quilt. I always have loved antiquing, and my mom and I were out and about, and I have always sewed since a very early age. I still have the sewing machine from one that I was given for Christmas when I was five.
Oh.
Yeah, and was just starting quilting at that time and came across a couple of antique quilts, only like $25, $30 at that time, and purchased two that day, and it started from there.
Do you know how many you have?
Oh, a little over 200 probably.
Oh, I want to come roll around in your quilts. Oh my gosh. So out on allpeoplequilt.com on the website for American Patchwork, you can put in Julie's name and click to a profile. And this is very fascinating, Julie. Tell me, there's a lot of room scenes on here. Are these actually your home?
They are. American Quilting came to my home a couple of years ago now and did several shoots. And, of course, not many of those make the magazine. Mm-hmm. So they put a few in the magazine, and then now the rest of them, or quite a few of them, are on allpeople.com. And what they show is how I decorated my own home with quilts. So it gives people an idea on what they can do.
That's great. And what issue of Quilt Sampler was your shop in?
2002.
Okay, good. So people, they keep those so they can go back.
They do. I do, too.
Yes. Got to have all those back issues. So if somebody's getting ready to start collecting now, which, of course, quilts have, as a collector item, are pretty hot. They're not inexpensive anymore. You still can get a deal. What kind of tips do you have for someone just starting out?
I think you should still buy what you love. Same way with fabric and quilt shop. Buy what you love, not because you needed a particular thing that day. So keep your mind open. Look around, see what's available. I've read before that you should buy inexpensive quilts and then your collection can grow in the future. But I've never been able to part with a quilt, so that wouldn't work with me. But again, buy what you can afford, buy what you love, and you'll always keep it probably.
So now I'm curious because I'm asking, anybody who collects quilts now, is anybody collecting those 60s and 70s quilts yet? Is that happening?
Well, not that I know of, but I've been making those 70s quilts, so I don't think I'll be collecting those anytime soon.
No, I know. It might be just too new, or maybe someone who's like 20 might start collecting those.
That's true. Sure.
Yeah. Different generation coming in because, to us it's like, and there's a lot of poly in those too.
There might be. Yep.
Yeah. The ones I've seen have been like, they were... Just can't
double
get the love
tied.
Going.
Yep, there you go.
So if you've bought an antique quilt, often, particularly if you might have gotten a deal, they may be pretty dirty. How do you handle that?
There's many wonderful quilt soaps on the market. There's one in a beautiful floral bag that's called Quilt Soak. I have used that. There's a new one that I just picked up that's on the market now that's called Retro Clean, and I think that's more for removing brown stains from laying on wood or that kind of thing.
Okay.
But otherwise, Orvis. I've used Orvis for years. I think the dirtiest quilt I've ever bought, I probably soaked in Orvis overnight and had really good luck.
You know, I had one that I eventually just had to get rid of because my mother-in-law had bought it and she didn't realize it, but like it had mice had eaten holes down through all the layers as it was folded.
Sure.
And she hadn't opened it up. And so when she, you know, when she did, she still gave it to me, but I soaked that thing so many times and with all the big holes, it just sort of went one day. It was like, yeah.
You'll have to search for another one.
I know. I do have a few, but mine are usually, you know, in the lower price range. Thus, the mouse holes and the dirt. That's usually my price range. So let's talk about. We have American Patchwork and Quilting has an issue called Quilt Lovers Favorites, and you have two projects coming up in there from your antique quilts. And let's see, the first one, I've got it pulled up here, is called Summer Breeze. And this is the one sort of like a chain, but not a chain, like an Irish chain, but not an Irish chain. Tell me about that quilt.
That quilt, I actually bought at a flea market. The person that I bought it from was using it as packaging material.
Oh, my.
So that was my one big deal of all these years of collecting. And that is the one that was really dirty that I did have to soak and soak. I've not seen that pattern before, and I haven't seen it since. That large blue square tends to break the pattern of the chain.
Right.
Yeah. I do
and
have.
It's very pale. It's very tone on tone, too.
It is. You know, I collect quilts. Most of my collection is from the late 1800s, but I've also gone into the 30s. So that one would be one part of a 30s collection that I have.
Mm-hmm. Probably because it's a summer issue or something coming out. So.
Yeah.
Now, did you have to convince this guy to give you the quilt? How did that work?
No, I mean, he was just so surprised that I even wanted it. I don't think he knew even know what the word quilt meant. And he tried to sell me cardboard, bubble wrap, you name it, because he thought I was looking for packaging for some wonderful purchase.
It's like, no, I just want that rag in your truck.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, you also have another quilt that'll be in that issue that is called Flying Solo, and it's got the pyramid blocks. Tell me about that quilt.
That one I purchased because of the set. If you look at that quilt straight on, most often, or any other quilt that I've owned, that triangle has been straight on. Mm-hmm. This one is on a diagonal.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And wonderful, wonderful use of color. There are so many fabrics in that, and I think that woman was very talented that made that, you know, to put the colors in that position and to find that many fabrics. And was a great quilt, great find.
She worked hard at it.
She did. Yeah,
you wonder what she was thinking to put it on a slant like that.
Yeah, like I said, I've not seen that before. So
now, American Patchwork and Quilting does optional colorways, and for this one, they did like a table runner option with some solids.
That is one thing that I really like about the magazine is because they do offer that color option. And being in the store every day, that is one thing that is hard for people is to visualize it in other fabrics. So that's very helpful, you know, to have that there.
Yes. Now, speaking of solids, because your store has, you focus on vintage fabrics, right?
We do.
Right. Are you finding that you're mixing any solids in since there's sort of a movement of solids right now?
You know, we do use a lot of solids in the 30s quilts, but as far as the Civil War fabrics, we tend not to.
It just doesn't seem to flow.
No, it doesn't really lend itself to that. Yeah. If you start studying those quilts,
Yeah, I remember my very first quilt, the shop, suggested I use a solid navy with it. I could not comprehend that. I did it, and it looked really nice, but I was sort of like, solid?
Beiges on the background that we use a lot of. You know, they make great backgrounds for a lot of those busier fabrics.
A little bit of texture and things like that.
Yeah, exactly, instead of a solid.
So tell me, just walk us into your store for those that haven't been there and don't have that issue.
We are in an older part of downtown, so our building tends to lend itself to what we like. If you walk into the front of our store, what you're probably going to be greeted by is some of the latest fabric collections. We try to put those up in the front. We also sort our fabrics by collection instead of by color. We also drape our fabric, which gives you a little bit more fabric to look at rather than just a thin, you know, 2-inch strip. So that I think that makes our store look a little bit different. We go on towards the back, and way in the back then is where we have our 30s fabrics.
Ah, do you do a lot of classes in your store?
You know, we don't do classes. There are a lot of great classes in our area, so I mm-hmm. think they're pretty well covered. What we tend to do is once a month in the evening, we have everybody come to the store that wants to, and we do show and tell. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to see what other people are working on, too, not just what I've done lately.
Yes. Oh, show and tell is the best, isn't it?
It is. It is. And have other quilters meet other quilters and make mm-hmm. new friends.
Yeah. Oh, new friends. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So do you take your quilts out? Do you go out and lecture yourself with your antiques?
I hadn't until about 10 years ago when we were in the magazine as one of the top shops. People started calling saying, would you mm-hmm. be willing to share your collection with us? So mm-hmm. what I did at the beginning was maybe take 15, 20 quilts, try to give a lot of history, when they were from, why those fabrics were used, and mm-hmm. later changed to bringing probably 75 or 100 quilts and doing more of a trunk show and tell. More quilts, the more people. Yeah, I mean, they enjoyed that so much more.
They just want to see quilts.
They do. They do. And then they can ask questions as they go instead of having me lecture at them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you travel, since you're taking real quilts with you, do you travel a very far distance? Like if somebody wanted you to come across the country, are you able to do that?
Probably not across the country. We usually mm-hmm. try to make it within driving distance so that mm-hmm. I can, take them with me.
Yeah, like an 8-hour drive or something.
There you go. Yeah.
I've taken real quilts also, and it's hard because to travel, I can't do that. It's just too costly anymore, isn't it?
And to leave them in your car, you know, overnight and stuff, that kind of thing. Yeah.
don't want to do that. So why don't you give me, like, you know, is there one quilt that you need for your collection that you haven't collected yet? Have you thought about that? Are you sort of like searching for one?
You know, I'm not. It's more of a stumble upon it. That's mm-hmm. the thrill of the hunt. And, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. find something that, you know, I haven't seen the pattern, I haven't seen the color, or it's in wonderful workmanship.
Ah. Now, briefly, the quilting on your quilts, are you mostly pieced quilts in your antique collection, or do you have some applique?
Just a couple of applique. Most of the other ones are all pieced. More fabric, the better. And that's what we encourage our customers to sew, too.
Right.
And the quilting is mostly on those quilts because they're not applique. They don't have a lot of fine quilting on them. They're gridded.
Mm-hmm.
And so we encourage people also to try gridding themselves. It's something that you can certainly do on your home machine.
Good, good, good. So tell me your fabric line that's out right now before we're done.
Miniatures is out right now. And in the fall is a new line, not quite even named yet, that's going to be Red, Brown, and Cheddar.
Awesome, awesome. And they're through?
Wyndham.
Wyndham, and so they can get them at your store, I assume.
They can, or nationwide.
Or nationwide. Absolutely fabulous. Julie, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Pat. Good to talk to you.
You too. Everybody go out and visit Julie at jjstitches.com. We'll be back after this break with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.
Free stuff. Find out about our newest online sweepstakes and contests and how you can enter at allpeoplequilt.com/promos.
Come see what's cooking at the Moda Bake Shop website. You'll find free recipes for using the wide range of Moda pre-cuts from your favorite designers and quilt shops. We've got ideas for using a variety of ingredients, including honey buns, jelly rolls, layer cakes, charm packs, and more. Instructions with detailed step-by-step photos guide you through the recipes and the fun. New projects served up daily at modabakeshop.com.
Do you love free motion quilting but struggle to fit your project in a small throat space? The HQ Suite 16 is designed for you. With 16 inches of throat space, there is room to work on even a king-size quilt. The smooth surface of our height-adjustable table allows your project to glide under the needle with ease. The HQ Suite 16 is built with powerful HQ technology designed to handle all your quilting projects.
Visit HandyQuilter.com to request a free demo DVD or find an HQ rep in your area. Handy Quilter, designed by a quilter for quilters.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
We're listening to you. Comment on today's show and tell us your ideas for future shows. Visit the contact page on our website, allpeoplequilt.com. Now, back to the show. Here's Pat.
You're back with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, and I have my buddy on, Roseanne Kermes from Rosebud's Cottage, and we are going to chat about what we saw at the spring trade show that just happened in Salt Lake City. Hi, Roseanne.
Hi, Pat. How are you today?
I am excited to have you here. I love chatting about what we found because we both find different things, don't we?
We sure do. But we still kind of always see sort of the same things as well, or different versions of it. So that's how it's always fun to compare notes that way.
I know. It's like, So we chatted before the show, and we have some things we want to share with everybody. One of the cool things that you noticed was sort of these, seeing that we've had people on talking about vintage quilts, sort of the more contemporary versions of them.
Yes. I think one of the things that I thought was really interesting is how there were a number of designers who were using contemporary fabrics, but in traditional settings, and with a lot of quilting. And the ones that kind of struck my, or, you know, that I have in my memory are the ones that had sort of like an Irish chain setting, but then in the blank spots, they had really beautiful quilting, whether it might have been machine quilting, it might have been hand, you couldn't tell the difference. But I thought it was great because it was a nice mix of old and new. And nice to see the modern fabric in a setting that isn't just, you know, straight on graphic. It still has a graphic look, but without being so linear, you know.
Right.
And you don't know about traditional things. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And the open spaces allow that pretty quilting because if you've got the large, the modern fabrics are often high contrast, you know, the prints, so they don't show the quilting on the fabric very well for those kind of prints.
Well, and what I saw, too, is that they were using, like, the contemporary fabrics, but they were using more very subtle backgrounds, you know, like perhaps all one color, and so that the quilting really showed up so much better on there. There was traditional style quiltings, like wreaths and feathers, you know, to find in the quilts from, like, 1940s.
Yeah. I love feathers.
Yeah.
They're so pretty. So did you see a lot of hand quilting this time on some of the designers' pieces?
Well, you know, I can't tell if it's hand quilting or machine quilting anymore. It's so good.
I know.
I did see that there were a number that had, like, spaces that they filled in with, like, a garland of flowers or leaves or things like that. So they were using the space a little bit more, like you would see done traditionally, but they still also had a little more of a modern feel to them.
I've seen a lot of straight grids. You know, just good, but tight, not like the crosshatch grids like Julie was talking about on the antique quilts, but straight linear grids on these that are really fascinating.
Yeah, and there was some that they were, like you said, kind of tight together, maybe half inch or so, but they would go up and curve around the top, not go up like straight off. They'd go up to like a point where you had a turn, and they would loop around and come back down. So they still had some fluidity to it. I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, a lot of neat stuff.
Yeah, I was thinking about this too, listening to Julie. You know, she's talking about the Irish chains, and you know, I've been on and off the All People Quilt website. There are some great versions of these things that we're talking about in their project list, and they have a great thing on quilting designs that are traditional designs, so people kind of want to get a feel for what that would look like. that's
yeah,
a
there's a lot of patterns. So you could download the free patterns at allpeople.com.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome, awesome. So tell me, we also saw what I would call, or what we're calling pictorial quilts.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember in the 70s and early 80s, you would see a lot of like wall hangings that would show like a house or a barn or something on that order with a tree and the porch and the flower gardens and,
yeah. and
things
and a
like
little
that.
Cat and a little dog.
A little cat. Yeah, yeah, maybe somebody, you know, a child in the yard or something on that order. I saw a lot of those again this time, and I was really surprised by it. Because they, you know, they are kind of a little bit more traditional. I was surprised to see that, but they were done in very soft and pretty colors. What I thought was interesting too is a lot of them were commemorating some kind of family event, like a family reunion or a gathering of that kind of thing, or churches and quilts. But they had a real soft, serene look to them, and you know, I wonder if it's maybe kind of a product of the times, you know, where things have been kind of rocky lately, and we want to go back to maybe things that make us feel a little more comfortable and kind of calm. But they were also, they weren't fused down like I typically see. There was a lot of needle turn applique. So that means to me that people are taking the time to sit down, plan out their project, and doing it step by step.
Right. And they're also portable. So, you know, a lot of quilters who have young families or any children probably are out and about, and a hand project is so perfect.
It is. Well, especially because you can do just, you can work from the bottom up and you can do a little bit at a time. And, you know, I'm a big fan of stitching, and there's that calmness that you get when you're pulling, you know, thread through fabric, and you know, someday, you know, it's a great way to solve problems or be distracted from your kids, or you know, just relax after a, you know, a rough day at work, you know, to be able just to create something by stitching fabric and to fabric with a thread and stuff.
I know, kind of it's an amazing effect to just sit with your project. I love it.
And you know, both of these, like the contemporary vintage quilts and the pictorial quilts, I'll push back to things that we've seen in the past, and I know that you're taking part in that blog hop with Erin Gilday.
Yes, Patchwork Underground.
When I saw that with the Seminole piecing, it's like, holy cow. I was just looking through some of my mom's old Quilters Newsletter magazines about a month ago, and it's like, well, I wonder if this will ever come back, because I know I was kind of afraid of it before I learned
Seminole piecing was like hard. It looked hard.
It looked terrifying. But her, you know, I've been on her blog hop watching it progress, and she takes all the scariness out of it. I thought that was pretty fun.
Erin is actually amazing. She is quite talented with breaking things down, you know, for her book. And I just love that she was inspired by something she was finding in magazines from a while ago.
Well, that picture on her blog, with all the magazines stacked up, I started looking at the spines of them and what dates they were in what magazines, and I actually have some of those from my mom's collection. So we're talking really old magazines here.
I don't know, should we share this with Erin or not? You know, this.
but don't you find it fun that somebody is inspired by stuff that has gone before? I'm very traditional, and I love that people look back to what has happened and find a way to make it new again.
Yeah, I mean, I do that, but I'm looking at things from the 1800s.
What?
Not the 70s, you know?
Yeah, I know, that is kind of sad.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I could pick you up in a few years, you know? Maybe I should do that. But, yeah, very cool. So now tell me your news. You're going to be in the next issue of what?
American Patchwork and Quilting in the June issue.
The regular magazine.
The regular magazine, the one that all the subscribers get. It's very fun. They came to my workshop that we call the Hideout here in White Bear
Lake. The Hideout. Okay. That's like Hideout. Everybody has a workspace, a studio. No, Roseanne has a Hideout. Now, we're all jealous.
I truly do come down here, and I hide from, like, when it's a bad day or when I'm excited about something, I'm down here. It's three
there
rooms.
All the time, everybody. Don't believe her. All the time. There are three rooms. Three rooms you have.
Three rooms that each have a little bit of a different look. But yeah. I was excited to see the tear-off at Quilt Market. Elizabeth Beast showed me what they were going to look like in the magazine, and it was fun to see the things that I love photographed so beautifully. And I'm very excited about having that profile story in the magazine. And I'm going to do a blog about how the hideout looks today versus mm-hmm. when they were here, because of course I've added some more things and I've changed some things around and stuff. That's the fun of it. So
now tell everybody where your quilt store is, which is around the corner from the hideout.
Yeah, I'm in downtown White Bear Lake, Minnesota, and I'm just outside of St. Paul, kind of close to the Wisconsin-Minnesota border. My store is on 3rd Street, right downtown, and the hideout is just around the corner, so it's all walking distance. Cute town. We have lots of stuff going on here. It's a fun place to take the family and take the girls, come out for a day out and that kind of thing. So
Everybody else can go buy ice cream while the quilter shops. So
that's exactly right.
Now, is your hideout open? I mean, like if you're in the store, can you take people over and see it if they want?
If I have if I have employees in the store helping me, sure. If people want to come down and see it, I'm always happy to show it off. Sometimes we'll do some of our classes down here. We'll just kind of walk down for a little field trip, or if I want to show them how to use a tool or something, mm-hmm. I'll bring people down here. If the door is open, people are welcome to come in. If it's locked, I'm obviously at the store.
One other thing we saw before we end is small blocks. You found a lot of little blocks.
Yeah, I saw some in one designer's booth. It's like they were kind of, they weren't like miniature blocks. They weren't like the 3.5 mm-hmm. 3-inch blocks we think of. They were more 4 to 6-inch blocks. But they were used, sometimes they were, the entire quilt was made of small blocks. And then other times the quilts were made of a combination of these smaller blocks and then big blocks, mm-hmm. But what I liked about them is they weren't as intimidating as a 3-inch block. I can see people coming into the store and thinking, 5 inches, I can make a 5-inch block. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look mm-hmm. that hard. And mm-hmm. they weren't just simple, small little piecing ones. It's a couple of the ones I saw had a lot of intricacy to them. They were, half square triangles and quarter squares and things. So, there were some skills built into them. But they were very, very charming. I loved how they looked, and I loved how they kind of finished out some of the big blocks and some of the quilts. So I think that's something we'll be seeing coming down the road, maybe a little bit more of that.
Wonderful. Well, Roseanne, this has been just fabulous.
It's always fun talking to you, Pat.
Yeah, go out and visit Roseanne Kermes at rosebudscottage.typepad.com for her blog. And come back next week, where I have Ann Sutton of Bunny Hill, Sandy Klopp of American Jane, Patty Young of Mod Kids, and Kimberly Jolly from The Fat Quarter Shop. Then head over to allpeoplequilt.com for more tips and free patterns and technique videos. We'll see you next week. This is Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.